saw it firsthand that day. I never expected to see anything like this in my whole life. Ever.
I would say that when you hear the word miracle, you know, sometimes people throw that around kind of gratuitously, but what you experienced was in fact a miracle.
The fire, him protecting us, because Randy, when I got home that day, I was a little late. My wife looked right at me and she said, "What happened?" I couldn't even speak to her. She said, "Your face is blood red."
Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton.
Welcome to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thank you so much for joining me this week. We're going to take a walk into the interview room here shortly, where you're going to hear a story that I guarantee you will send shivers down your spine. It did me. And it's a little different than most of the interviews that I do during this show. But I think you will not only enjoy it, but you'll be touched by it. Before we even do that, though, we're going to take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The Briefing Room. Headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
My view from the blue this week, we're going to talk about something that has been all over the news. This has been probably the biggest news story that we have heard in years. And it concerns the incredibly torturous event that took place in Charlottesville, Virginia this week. As we know, there were three deaths at the protests that took place down there. One was the death of a civilian who was run over by a domestic terrorist. There were a number of injuries that went along with that when this sick individual ran his car into this group of people who were there protesting, and we'll go into that in just a moment. But the fact of the matter is that a civilian was killed, a number of others injured, and then there were two Virginia State Troopers who were killed in the crash of their police helicopter as they were working this incident. Three deaths that didn't have to happen. The death that should not have happened. And what are the reasons for this? Let's look at what took place. There was a planned protest, and it was taking place in the small town of Charlottesville, Virginia. The people that had the permits to do this protest were, in essence, a group of several hundred white supremacists. They consisted of the KKK and other extremist groups that espouse this same philosophical insanity. They were permitted to protest. They had given the information to law enforcement, and they showed up as they said they were going to. It was also well understood that there would be anti-white supremacist protesters because they have shown up at basically every single event that has taken place that has a similar viewpoint. Law enforcement had a really good heads up on this. They knew it was going to take place. And the chief of police, whose name I will remember here in a moment, had the ultimate responsibility to make the planning for this event. So, this event took place. The white supremacists showed up in their stupid-looking uniforms with white KKK stuff all over them and chanting and doing all the moronic things that an extremist view puts out. And they were there ostensibly. This was the reason for the protest, quote unquote. It was the removal of Civil War era statues. The statue of General Lee and other people. That the community had decided they were going to take down. Now, my personal views, I don't think we should be rewriting history. I think that those statues should remain. But that was what the community decided. This group decided to protest, which is their legitimate right to do. Just like Black Lives Matter has the right to protest the things that they do, this group has the right to protest. That's what our nation is based on, the right of free speech. Now, law enforcement has a huge responsibility here. Their responsibility is to keep order, to keep protesters safe, to make sure that they do the things that they are supposed to do and comply with the laws and keep everyone safe and allow this protest to take place. Well, Antifa showed up. Antifa, of course, is the anarchist group that has demonstrated their absolute willingness to engage in violence at the drop of a hat. They showed up at Berkeley during that mess. They showed up at Dallas. They showed up at Baltimore. Everywhere that there is a hot spot where they can cause damage and wreak havoc, all in the name of anarchy, but of course they don't call it that. They call it, you know, protesting for legitimate reasons. Well, they showed up. Now, here's where things get really dicey. Law enforcement already has the knowledge that these two groups are going to show up at the same place. It is inevitable. There isn't one shadow of a doubt that this is going to turn violent. And yet, when these, quote, protesters, unquote, disembark from their modes of transportation, some on buses, some in their personal vehicles, they are obviously armed. They're armed with sticks, they're armed with clubs, they're armed with baseball bats, they're armed with 2x4s. Now, what is the purpose of this? The purpose of, is to have violent activity. And law enforcement did nothing. Nothing. Now, law enforcement wasn't even equipped. They didn't even have riot gear on. They didn't have protective helmets. They didn't have protective vests. Why is that? Just as we have seen in many of these other similar protests, somebody up the food chain of command has made the decision not to equip their officers with safety equipment, the proper equipment to handle violent riots. So these officers don't even have the gear that they should have. Within a very short proximity of time, the inevitable takes place. Massive fights, massive brawls on a scale that would be basically a riot. And the two sides just are slugging it out. They're beating each other. There is total chaos. Total chaos. And law enforcement was basically AWOL. They were absent without leave. Why? Why didn't they move in? Why didn't they take care of their responsibilities? Well, the answer, of course, is leadership. And the leadership, once again, failed the community, and it failed the officers. They allowed hours and hours of mayhem until the tragic running down of protesters. This should never have happened. It should never have taken place. But because of the lack of leadership in the Charlottesville Police Department, National Guard, State Police, who were all present, nothing was done. When as a law enforcement professional, I see this. I feel not only embarrassed for the profession, I feel as if leadership has gutted everything that policing stands for protecting those people in that community. Now, let's be real clear here. The combatants of this were two extremist groups. You had the white supremacists, consisting of KKK and other extremist groups on one side, then you have the anarchists of Antifa on the other side. Both of them are morons. Let me be really clear here. I don't want to mince words. They are a bunch of cretins who espouse these anti-human viewpoints, and they are willing to engage in violence for these radical viewpoints. One isn't any different than the other. They just have a different viewpoint. When it comes down to their morality, when it comes down to what they stand for, they stand for everything that is anti-American. America should stand for the values of our Constitution, which includes the right of free speech. These individuals are against free speech. And what they showed when they came together during this melee is that they are incapable of acting like civilized human beings. Law enforcement should have played a major role here. Law enforcement should have had a plan, and the plan should have included mass arrests and the personnel to carry these out, as well as the equipment to keep their officers safe. They did nothing. In fact, when confronted with the fact that law enforcement did nothing, the police chief denied that the cops were ordered not to intervene. I have it from an individual source in that law enforcement community. They were told to stand down. That's right. You heard me correctly. People are being beaten. People died. And law enforcement was ordered to stand down. And when, or I should say if, a true investigation takes place, those who made these decisions should be indicted. They should be brought to justice in the criminal justice system, because what they did is criminal. The police chief there, I watched him as he gave this. The only thing I can say is this ridiculous press interview. And people asked him, why didn't your people do anything? And the excuses that he came up with were embarrassing. They were embarrassing to as a law enforcement professional. And then when he was confronted with the fact that there were these rumors about his officers being told to stand down, he said, oh, it's simply not true that the cops have been told to stand down. And then he abruptly ended his television news conference. Yeah, it was pathetic to see. This guy doesn't deserve to be the chief of police. He needs to go be the manager of Wendy's or something, because his pathetic display just let his department down. There is no doubt in my mind, absolutely no doubt in my mind, that those law enforcement officers who were there had the ability to do exactly what they needed to do, but they were ordered not to do it. Now, who gave those orders? You think it was this goofy chief of police? I'm not thinking that at all. I'm thinking it came from way above that. I think it came from the politicians. Whether it was the politicians of the community, the mayor, or perhaps it even went further. Perhaps it even went up as far as the governor, who is a stone liberal, who perhaps wanted this to take place. Now, who knows the motivations? All I know is this. I know that people died. I know that civilians died. A civilian died, and other civilians were seriously hurt. I know the two police officers Virginia State Troopers lost their lives. And this was needless. And it happened because of incompetence. It happened because of cowardice. And those that made these decisions need to be held accountable. This is no different. And in fact, it's the same group of morons that attacked people in Berkeley when there was going to be a presentation at the University of California, Berkeley. And the police backed down, not only backed down, but under that incompetent chief of police of University of California, Berkeley, they surrendered. They ran away. They were ordered to run away by a coward who was their chief of police. What took place in Charlottesville is not much better. Law enforcement lost. Antifa, white supremacists, they won. This can't be allowed to happen in America. Law enforcement must do its job. Law enforcement must be given the ability to do their job, and politicians need to step the hell away. Those who made these decisions should be held accountable, not only civilly, but criminally. I have called for an investigation by the Department of Justice of the United States. I hope that the Attorney General listens to my plea, because this should never happen in America. And that's my view from the blue. And I got to tell you that one of the things that I really enjoy is getting to meet personally with the people that listen to this radio program. So if you would like to talk to me about addressing your group, whether it is a law enforcement or a civic group or even a volunteer group, let me know. Contact me at randysutton@americaoutloud.com. Thanks. Now let's take a walk into the interview room. This story is something that will touch you deeply. It will, in many cases, send a shiver down your spine because of the content. And the law enforcement officer who is telling you this story refused to give it to anyone in the major media because he didn't trust them to tell the story properly. This is an exclusive to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, and I hope you not only enjoy it, but you're touched by it. Let's take a walk into the interview.
We are one of the fastest growing podcast and talk radio networks in the world. You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. But we stand proudly with the men and women who serve in our armed forces and our law enforcement heroes. Thank you for being part of our family. And we'll see you back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Well, looking good and feeling good are not exactly the same thing. It's just like a car. It may look good from the outside, but what's the inside look like? More importantly than that, what's the inside of your cells look like? That's a question you need to ask yourself. Well, when I started taking Healthy Cell just a few months ago, it has changed my program. I mean, it's boosted my energy. I sleep better, sharper focus. I feel healthier, and hopefully we'll all live longer with improved cells. Well, 90-plus nutrients infused into every cell of your body. Well, this is an exclusive offer for friends of America Out Loud. You can try it today free. When I say free, I mean free. It's our Healthy Cell Pro 7-Day Sample. Free shipping, no risk, no obligation, no credit card required. So this is a complimentary gift from America Out Loud. You can go to healthycell.com/outloudsample or just go to americaoutloud.com and click the large banner ad, and our complimentary gift will be on its way to your home.
With me today on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement in the interview room, is a retired Memphis police officer, Richard Morrow. And Richard did 28 years with the Memphis Police Department, retiring as a canine officer. But it's an incident that took place on February 21st, 2016, which changed his life forever. I'm going to read you a paragraph that came from CNN about the incident we're going to talk about. Here's what it said. Divine intervention? That's what one witness is calling it after a driver and his Bible survived a car accident that caused the vehicle to burst into flames. The accident happened on State Route 385 in Memphis, Tennessee, when a Jeep went off the road and quickly caught fire. Several Good Samaritans came to the driver's aid, trying to get him out, according to CNN affiliates. When an officer arrived on the scene, he saved the driver. A Bible was also recovered from the car, apparently unscathed by the fire, despite the car ending up a total loss in ashes. One witness posted video on Facebook saying, "I just saw God on 385. Richard, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Thank you, Randy.
You know, Richard, you experienced something that altered your life on this day. Tell my listeners what you saw.
Okay. It started out just, you know, I worked daytime hours, and it had been a pretty busy week, so I was getting the tail end of my busy week, and that was on a Sunday, and it was a beautiful day. I mean, we had rain all that week, flooding, and just for the past 2 days, it opened up, and I remember heading to my house, because we get off work at 2:45, and we usually leave the kennels about 2:15 or so, or a little bit earlier. Traffic was really light. On the most, like most days, traffic's backed up on the weekends. But for some reason, I was just thanking Jesus above, because I was just ready to get home, you know, and not even really thinking I was talking to him that much. And when I came up to 385, traffic was backed up. And I just knew it was probably an accident. I didn't see exactly where it was at the time. As I got closer, I saw the SUV down the embankment. It had hit the concrete barrier to the big light pole that they have on the interstates. And it was already on fire. And there were other citizens standing around. They were trying to break the window out. I immediately parked my car, ran down there, identified myself as a police officer. I got on the radio, told my dispatch I need some help up there, and told her what I had. I had a driver that was inside the car. I didn't know at the time he wasn't able to be pulled out at the time. I didn't see how bad it was till I actually physically broke the window myself and cut his seatbelt. I remember reaching in to see if he was responsive. I give his last name. The driver is Mr. Johnson. He's in his 70s. He was incoherent. He was in shock. I saw it, you know, just the years that you've been on, you know, when people go in shock.
Sure.
Okay. I remember feeling his chest area, and the steering wheel was really hot. Mr. Johnson was wearing he had a tie on, a white shirt, and a dark colored jacket. And it appeared that he just got out of church. I didn't know it at the time, but that's what it appeared to be. And anyway, me and another gentleman, we tried to open the driver door, but it was pinned shut.
Now, has the fire already started, right?
Yes, the fire was about, if you look at the video, on YouTube on that, like I told you, that's Anita Irby that was videotaping it. At the time I got there, it's hard to see because his SUV is actually black and I wear a black outfit. The only thing you could really tell was the canine logo on the back of my shirt. It's white. You have to look very closely because when she started videotaping, that's when I got to the driver door.
Okay.
And yes, the fire was already raging. I'm going to estimate probably 10, maybe 15 feet in the engine block.
And now you're getting into the car with him.
Not at that time. We tried to open the driver door, but it wouldn't open.
Okay.
Okay. I don't really remember me walking so casual till I saw the video, and it's really amazing. Because I just casually walked around his vehicle to the rear to the passenger door. Which just opened really easy. Another gentleman, his first name only, his name's Eugene. He was with me, and we both went in the passenger door. I remember putting my knee on the seat. Eugene came on my right side. And a gentleman got into the back seat. They were able to get the back door open. I didn't see them do that, but I remember a gentleman getting in the back seat, another citizen. And he let the driver's seat down to try to get the Mr. Johnson in a lower position so we could pull him out. And what I saw was the dash was sitting right on top of his right leg.
Right.
It had collapsed. The steering wheel was up against his chest before they put the seat back. So when they put the seat back, of course, it relieved any pressure from his chest. It looked pretty hopeless. And the guy in the back seat started pulling. I helped him pull from underneath his armpits to try to pull him backwards. He wasn't even moving an inch. And we tried 3 or 4 attempts to try to pull him out like that.
Right. And the dashboard was pinning his legs into the seat.
Yes. Yes. And at the time I looked at the front windshield and the fire was really coming close to the front windshield. I felt it. I heard it. It was loud. I could even hear the people screaming outside the car. I didn't see them because I was more looking at the driver and the people that were helping me. But I could hear all that. It was very, very loud. My dispatch says she tried to pick me up a couple times. And, of course, I couldn't hear it because it was so loud.
Okay.
And at that time, I saw where the fire was coming up. It was really raging, really loud. And it made those popping noises. And I knew right then it was getting really close to all the plastics that were up close to the area we were actually at and where the driver was at.
And you're using all of your strength, you and the other gentleman, trying to pull him out, and you're not getting anywhere.
We weren't getting anywhere. It was 2 of us, and then 3 of us, and then Eugene got in and tried to help me. We're in the same spot, and the gentleman in the back seat. I never got his name. And we all 3 of us tried to get as low as part of his leg. Eugene tried to pull him. I tried to pull him from his shoulders. The other guy had his other shoulder, and we tried with all our force to try to pull him out.
Wow. Okay. And what happened?
Okay. When the fire got really close to the windshield, I got that gentleman out of the back seat. And then I told Eugene, when I got that guy out of the back seat, Eugene got out and started backing up because we just knew at any moment it was going to come through the windshield and it was going to be pretty quick. It was extremely hot. And I remember when I got that gentleman out of the back seat, I told him, please get out. You know, I didn't want anybody else to get hurt.
Right.
And now
you're figuring that this is, you're going to just have to get the hell out of there.
Yes. Yes. And something hit me and I just said a prayer to Jesus. We just need help. Eugene started to walk away. He had that look on his face. Like, you know, he looked very disgusted that we couldn't get him out. He looked very sad. And I remember I just grabbed him by his arm and he told me what his name was, and I said, Eugene, let's try one more time. I don't want to see this guy burn in front of us. Okay, the fire is already raging if you watch the video. It's probably about 20 feet high at the time.
Wow.
And
you went back into that car?
Yes, sir, I did. Okay, as we got back in, it felt like somebody turned on the air conditioning. It got so cold.
The fire is raging around you, and it got cold in the car?
Yes. It was, I knew there was, I didn't know it at the time, but I said, this doesn't, you know, it wasn't calculating right to me. I said, why is it cold? I said it to myself. Eugene had that look like, you know, what's going on? And as we got closer, we barely even got within maybe inches from Mr. Johnson and somebody. I felt the presence of somebody that was there with us and just lifted Mr. Johnson up as perfect as you could be on a straight board.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Let me get this right. The fire is raging around you, and Eugene are in the car trying one last-ditch effort to get this individual who's pinned in the car out. You feel a presence. You feel cold, even though the fire is raging, and suddenly you're able to just pull him out effortlessly?
We didn't even pull him. We didn't even touch him. That's what's so amazing. We didn't even put our hands on him when he got lifted up. Well, actually,
you saw him being physically lifted and you weren't touching him.
Wasn't even touching him. And he turned right towards us. And I remember Mr. Johnson just coming right by us. And we felt the presence of the angel. Something just clicked to me. The only person that could be helping us would be an angel. And he came by us. I remember the people, if you see the video, you see some people standing behind us. We got him out, we, with the angel's help, you know, we guided him out. And the other citizens grabbed him and pulled the driver off to safety, away from the fire. And I need to say one more thing. When we felt the presence that were in there, I didn't hear the fire. I didn't hear the people screaming. It was almost like it was a very calm situation. And it was so amazing. It took me a few days after the incident to really realize what I actually saw. It's, to be able to articulate exactly what it felt like for those 8-12 seconds that it took. And once the driver got out, and of course I looked back at the fire and it had already come through the windshield. And I was just floored by it, how quickly it just engulfed the whole inside of the vehicle within about 40 seconds after we got him out.
Wow. And didn't a woman say something to you when you got out of the car?
Yes. I didn't get the lady's name, but she's in a red and white dress outfit. And I remember she came right up to me and she said, Officer, did you see the angel? And she actually saw the angel where she was standing outside the passenger door. And I told her, I said, Sister, we felt the presence of him.
Did Eugene see or feel the same thing?
Me and Eugene felt the same thing. We talked about it. And I said, did you feel the same thing I did? He goes, yes, I did. I said, can we just pray and give thanks to the Lord upstairs for helping us getting that man, you know, for sending help getting that man out? Because if not, he was going to burn up to death right in front of us. And the news, I didn't know the news. Some reporters already down there videotaped us praying. But a few minutes later, we didn't even know about the Bible that survived. We were praying for the miraculous recovery of the driver. And I remember when we got him out, when he got pulled out, I walked over there and I checked his tie. I checked his chest. I checked his suit. He didn't have one burn on him.
That's amazing.
He had 3 ripped parts of his pants on the right side, and I saw where his leg was broken. I could tell it was broken in multiple spots. It was actually broken in 3 different spots, from the upper, middle, and lower. That's how severe that the impact had hit his leg. And I remember looking at it. And I mean, it's just so amazing that he didn't have one burn mark on him. And the witnesses said by the time I got there, the accident had occurred probably about 30 seconds before I pulled up. But it was immediate how fast the vehicle caught fire just at the right point where he hit it.
Let's talk about the Bible. So the car was fully engulfed. I mean, I saw the video, I saw the photographs. It was just a charred heap. Everything was just completely blackened and charred.
Yes.
The fire department got there and they extinguished the fire?
Yes, they showed up a few minutes later. The whole incident, by the time I got there, was only 3 minutes and something seconds. And my wife showed me the video a couple days later, and I didn't know it, any video had existed on it. And yes, the fire department showed up probably about 3 or 4 minutes later. And they put the, by the time they got there, there's video of it just engulfed, flaming. I mean, it gutted that whole vehicle. Everything inside, the seats melted, the aluminum inside. I mean, there was nothing left to be recognizable inside that vehicle.
And tell me about the Bible.
Okay. The fire department called the traffic sergeant over and handed them something. I didn't know what it was, from the passenger seat, front passenger seat. And the sergeant called me over and said, Richard, take a look at this. It was a leather-bound Bible. And that's the photos I sent to you. That's just minutes after the fire. The vehicle was still smoking. And he showed me the Bible, and we both looked at it. It had hardly any damage on it. We opened it up, and all the pages inside were just crystal clear. One miracle and then top of another one. I was floored when I saw that.
I saw the pictures that you sent me, and this Bible looks virtually unscathed, and yet it was in this fully engulfed vehicle where everything else was charred.
Pictures can't speak what actually happened that day. I mean, the vehicle was still hot, even, and the one fireman said it had to be 800 degrees to be able to melt everything like that. The fireman that saw the Bible come out, they were just like speechless. They'd never seen anything like it.
So within this 3 minute period, you arrive on the scene of a traffic accident. The vehicle catches fire. The individual who's driving the car, an elderly man, is pinned in the vehicle. You do your best along with some passerby to extricate him, but you simply can't get him out. You are about to give up. You leave the vehicle, and then you give it one more try. You feel this cold presence, and then he is virtually lifted out of the vehicle without you even touching him, except guiding him. He gets out of the vehicle, and then after the fire is extinguished, this burned, charred hulk of a car, a fireman finds a Bible that is basically unharmed. What do you attribute this to?
I give it to the man upstairs, 100%. I found out that the Mr. Johnson was given that Bible about 2 months ago. His wife had just passed. And stranger enough, we found out that his pastor told him, keep it with you. You have a guardian angel with you.
Well, I'd say that that's probably some of the most prophetic words ever spoken by that pastor. We're already a man of faith before this took place.
Yes, I'm like your average Christian at the time when all this happened. Been a police officer for all these years, and you're seeing how dark it was out there with all everything going on. We lost a young officer just, not long ago before that. And, you know, when I was always questioning, why do such good officers have to lose their lives, not just here, but everywhere, it seems like. And we're just being attacked on everything. We're out there trying to do good. Yeah, this changed me completely. I mean, 100% changed my whole attitude about everything, about faith, believing in the grace of Jesus. I mean, I saw it firsthand that day. I never expected to see anything like this in my whole life, ever.
I would say that when you hear the word miracle, you know, sometimes people throw that around kind of gratuitously, but what you experienced was in fact a miracle.
The fire, him protecting us, because Randy, when I got home that day, I was a little late. My wife looked right at me and she said, "What happened?" I couldn't even speak to her. She said, "Your face is blood red." I didn't even realize that that was from the heat. I didn't even feel it. It stayed red for about 2 hours to after the incident.
Have you stayed in touch with anybody that you experienced this with?
Yes, the driver, Mr. Johnson. I just called him just 4 days ago.
How's he doing?
He's doing his leg, you know, his age. He went through rehab for months. He stayed in the hospital for over almost 3 weeks. Rehab for months afterwards. Yeah, I mean,
what's his memory of this? Does he have one?
Exactly what I thought that day. He doesn't even remember me. He does. The only thing he remembers from the accident was being hit on the side. It was a hit and run and pushed down. He didn't even know what he hit. He doesn't even remember what he hit. He doesn't remember anything about being pulled out. He still has his Bible. And when I first shared with him what happened, you know, he had no idea. I mean, none. And I waited a few months after, because I knew what he was going through with the rehab and everything. And I finally made contact with him. And he's a Christian man. And, you know, we both prayed together. And he's really a good guy. I'm keeping in contact with him. I told him, I said, "I'm tempted to come back and visit my family back over there, and I want to meet you again," and, you know, just everything. I mean,
sure. When you experience, you know, a moment like that, there is a connection that is so close that, you know, it literally will bond you for the rest of your lives.
Anything, I mean, you can experience through life. I mean, family's number one, but something like this, you know, it affected so many people on the scene that day. This is the only second interview I've given on this.
I want to talk about that for a second. Now, you were besieged by all the major media to tell them this story.
It was crazy, Randy. I don't know how you were when you worked in Las Vegas, but I didn't like to talk to the news for nothing.
I think I understand that.
When I was at work the next day, there were reporters at the kennels. My major called me in and said, "Do you want to talk to him?" I said, "No, I don't." Because I was still trying to process it at the time.
Sure.
And they were going on the angle of the Bible. And I said, "There's more to the story." I grabbed another friend of mine on the unit. He's also a fellow believer. And I talked to Eric about it. And I said, "Eric, I don't want to talk to the liberal news here, because they would twist it. They wouldn't put in about the angel being pulled out by this, you know, to save the man." And I didn't know about the video that Anita had put out. I hadn't seen it yet. And anyway, I told the major, "Forget it, I'm not giving an interview." The next day, the reporters showed up at my house. They're not supposed to do that. They're supposed to go through the department for that, to get the media cleared for that, and they never did. And my stepdaughter was there, and I said, send them on the way and don't ever come back to the house.
Well, let me ask you this, Richard. I am absolutely so grateful that you have chosen Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, and me to be the first media person that you've spoken to about this. Why did you choose me?
I've been following you for a while, Randy. I've been watching your videos, and they're just heart-stopping. I mean, they're just so... A lot of it's I can't help it, but it's just negative. You had what's happening to officers today, and the craziness that's been going on, and just the lawlessness that's going across this country. And the glory that I saw that day, and feeling the presence of the angel, where I really didn't have it. I don't have any worries about anything. And it sounds strange, when I went back to work, I just had a whole different attitude. And I said, I prayed about it. I said, maybe I'll send a message to Randy and maybe show him there's more other than negativity that's out there with all the officers who are getting injured or killed or shot and attacked. And what really pushed it is about the canine officer that had his dog killed. I said, enough is enough. I got to call Randy. And
I'm honored that you did. Richard, I'm honored that you've chosen me and my radio show, Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, to tell this absolutely incredible story. It is something that I'm sure will affect the lives of all of my listeners, and as your life has been so dramatically altered for the better because of what you have experienced, and I hope that that the message that you give today is absorbed and appreciated by my listeners. I have no doubt that it will be. And this show is all about law enforcement, and there are so many aspects to it that I've never had a guest on that that experienced anything like what you did. And the fact that you've chosen this show to tell this story is something that I find absolutely incredible and honored. And I am honored that you chose to do that. I want to really thank you for being a guest on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, telling your story, and I have a great deal of respect and happy that you have now entered the world of retirement. You did 28 years of service. You served honorably. You touched the lives of countless people, and now with this story, you will continue to touch others and your dogs as well.
That's life in the country.
Thanks again, Richard, and we'll talk again soon.
Randy, thank you so much. And I just, I've been praying that other people will open up to this. They can hit me a message. You can give them my Facebook information if you'd like to.
What is your Facebook information? Let's get that out right now.
Yeah, they just look me up under Richard Morrow, and when they find me, my post is my first. I'm in uniform with my police dog that I graduated with back in the day. Message me. They can verify it to me on Messenger. I have met so many people from this incident, other Christians and other police officers and other firemen, first responders. And trust me, it changed me and it has changed everybody else.
I urge that to my listeners that Richard has opened himself up to be contacted by you on Facebook, Richard Morrow, and he'll be in police uniform. And is there a website or anything like that?
When I opened up my Messenger for the first time in ever, because, you know, I maybe in the past year, that's when my Messenger's my messages have exploded on the other one I did on a Christian radio show, but I never did it on social, you know, like what you do to go out and touch so many police officers. And, you know, I know you're a busy man, and I was just humbled that you would allow me to share this. And if other people want to message me, I would give them all the information where they can look this stuff up and see it firsthand.
Once again, I appreciate that. Go to Facebook, look up Richard Morrow, and you can message him there. Richard, thanks again so much, and you take care.
Thank you, Randy.
If you have security needs, that is, if your company needs security, we all need security, right? But if your company needs security or your business, the person you want to talk to is Doug Carter of JSD Protective Services. That's jsdprotectiveservices.com. Go check out their website. Now, I'm really impressed with their operation. I've met their folks. I've met Doug. And his commitment to the top training for these security officers is pretty impressive. These men and women that work for him are consummate security professionals. And they've got armed security. They do pretty much everything in the realm of security, which includes bodyguarding, private investigation, and they're all over the United States. So check them out, JSD Protective Services. Tell them Randy sent you. Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay homage to the men and women who have given their lives in the line of duty during that week. Unfortunately, this week I have four names to read. Four names of law enforcement officers who have given their lives in the line of duty. The first is Monty Platt of the West Texas A&M University Police Department in Texas. Corporal Monty Platt died of complications of an animal bite sustained on July 24, 2017, as he attempted to capture an injured feral cat on campus in the area of 301 26th Street. The cat bit him through his work gloves and punctured his skin. He received medical treatment and was given medication. The medication caused him to suffer a severe allergic reaction. He was transferred to the ICU at University Medical Center in Lubbock, and he was placed on a ventilator. His condition rapidly deteriorated, and he passed away on August 8, 2017. He'd served with the West Texas A&M University Police Department for 21 years and has served in law enforcement for 24. He is survived by his wife, son, and mother. Corporal Monty D. Platt, West Texas A&M University Police Department, end of watch, Tuesday, August 8, 2017. Trooper Pilot Berkey M. M. Bates, Virginia State Police. Trooper Pilot Berkey Bates and Lieutenant Pilot Jay Cullen were killed when their Bell 407 helicopter crashed into a wooded area in a residential neighborhood on Old Farm Road in Albemarle County, Virginia, at approximately 6:30 p.m. They were in the area to monitor a civil unrest that was occurring in Charlottesville, Virginia, during a large protest. The helicopter had just taken off to monitor the Virginia governor's motorcade after he arrived in the area to assess the situation. The helicopter experienced some sort of issue before crashing into the trees and becoming engulfed in flames. Trooper Bates and Lieutenant Cullen were both killed in the crash. Trooper Bates had served with the Virginia State Police for 13 years, was assigned to the aviation unit. He had previously served with the Florida Highway Patrol for 6 years. He is survived by his wife and his twin son and daughter. He was killed the day before his 41st birthday. Jay Cullen, who was the lieutenant pilot, had served with the Virginia State Police for 23 years and was assigned as the commander of the aviation unit. He is survived by his wife and two sons. Lieutenant pilot H.J. Cullen, trooper pilot Berkey M. M. Bates, Virginia State Police, their end of watch, Saturday, August 12, 2017. Deputy Sheriff Jimmy Clark of the Quitman County Sheriff's Office in Mississippi. Deputy Sheriff Jimmy Clark was killed in a vehicle crash while responding to a shooting call. He was traveling through the Falcon community on Mississippi 3, approximately 8 miles north of Marks, when he swerved to avoid two dogs that ran into the roadway. Deputy Clark had served with the Quinton County Sheriff's Office for 2 years and had previously served as the chief of the Crowder Police Department. He survived by his wife and children. Deputy Sheriff Jimmy Clark, Quinton County Sheriff's Office, Mississippi, end of watch, Sunday, August 13, 2017. Each of these officers gave their lives in the line of duty for the people that they serve. May they rest in peace. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. Now, I'm your host, Randy Sutton. You can find me at Facebook. If you look under Facebook and you see Randy Sutton Public Figure, just like that or follow it, and you can see everything that I write and post. You can communicate with me there as well. I answer all of my messages personally. You can also find me at Twitter at LT Randy Sutton. LT Randy Sutton at Twitter. And you can find my books at Amazon.com. I have 4 books, and I think you'll like them. A Cop's Life, True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, True Blue to Protect and Serve, and The Power of Legacy. Thanks again.